It is Super Bowl Sunday, so you know what that all means? Yeah, I was going to say it means nothing, actually. Other than the fact that Americans are going to learn their Roman numerals a little bit better. You know, that 47 thing, there'll be so many people going online trying to figure out how that's 47. So, you know, I guess that's good. But it's also baptism. But actually it's kind of neat is, go to the next picture. We're thinking about our middle school kids are up at Bay Lake Camp this weekend and getting back early this afternoon. So we think of them, keep them in prayers. Hope they're all having a great time. They just sent that picture off yesterday, so they're having a good time. Right now, what we are doing is we are starting this focus looking at the man Jacob in the Bible. And we've been doing that for 4 weeks. And I think there's some pretty interesting thing. We're calling this What's Next. The thing about Jacob is that, he's a hero of the story, right? I mean, he's the key to the story, but he's not really very heroic. And the thing about Jacob that makes him so special isn't that he was such a hero, but that he continually did what was next. That's it. And I think that's where we're going to see ourselves reflected in these stories over and over again, that's what we are called to do as well, simply to do what is next. He isn't remembered for how perfectly he did it. He's remembered for the fact that he did it. And, I kind of imagine him standing there on the edge of this promontory, looking off into the distance, the figurative distance of the future, or of all the possibilities, whatever lies, the possibilities of his life that lies before him. And what does he have to do? He says, I can't do all of that, but I am going to have to do something. And so he takes the next step. The next step, which is exactly what we're able to do. And he does it with about as much clairvoyance as we have in our lives, which isn't a whole lot. So your step is always what's next. But first, in order to really get to know Jacob, I think one of the things you need to do is kind of figure out who he is in the context of the larger story of the Bible. Because for a lot of us, I think, we know Jacob, he's one of the characters in the Bible. In fact, isn't that, that's who we get the name for our church? Jacob's Well comes from the same Jacob. Although it's a New Testament story, in other words, like a couple thousand years after Jacob, and with a well that has to do with, it's associated with him. But what we do is, so we've got this story about Jacob, and but to understand where he is in the larger picture, let's go see the larger picture of the book of Genesis. Oh yeah, okay, well, I'm ahead of myself. The larger picture of the book of Genesis, let's see the big picture here. There we go. This is kind of what happens, starting with Adam and going all the way to Moses, right? So hang with me. And this is, by the way, on the back of your Sunday papers. You're going to find the same little Prezi, and you can take a look at it there. But so where did this all start? The very beginning of the book of Genesis is Adam and Eve. That's an actual picture of them. And their children, Cain and Abel. And after them, there's, a couple generations. And then we get to the next major figure in the book of Genesis, which is Noah. And the ark, and then there's the promise around the rainbow and stuff like that, right? So it's Adam and Eve, then the next real kind of big piece that happens is Noah. And after that, we have Abraham. Now, this is really the beginning of our story today, because Abraham is the grandfather of Jacob. So you have Abraham who marries Sarah, but the thing that's really distinct about Abraham, and this is something you need to know as you're thinking about the book of Genesis, is that that is where the covenant, the promise, God's contract with us begins, right? And that covenant is basically this, and pop to the next, the covenant, and that covenant is that basically this is what God says to Abraham. Look at the stars in the sky and count them if you can. So shall your descendants be, and I shall give this land to you and your descendants. All right, so this is spoken early on to Abraham and is passed on, and actually I think today we are still trying to figure out exactly what it means to us and how God fulfills that, right? So you got Abraham and Sarah, and they give birth to Isaac, right? And Isaac marries Rebecca, and that's the next part of the story, and they give birth to, yes, back to where we're actually talking about today, okay? Jacob, whose name becomes Israel, but you'll hear about that in a couple weeks. But it isn't only Jacob who's born, it's also, he has a brother named Esau, and you're going to hear a lot about that today. And Jacob marries Rachel and Leah, and has a few concubines on top of that, which is a big takeaway today, of course. And they have 12 sons, including, who knows who's next? Joseph, the guy with many colors. And actually, the Broadway play does not do a bad job of teaching the story. I'll just say that. It's fun at the same time. Okay, And then Joseph, Joseph so goes, he ends up being sold into slavery and ends up in Egypt and becomes important in Egypt. And all of his brothers, because of a famine, they all have to come down and they start living there. And so then the people, the relatives, the ancestors all spend 400 years as slaves in Egypt until Moses comes along. There's a Disney movie about him. And he's the one who leads them out. He gets the Ten Commandments and all that kind of stuff. So you got that all? All right? So you have Adam and Eve, and then you go to Noah, and then you go to Abraham and Sarah, and then you have bing, bing, bing. Abraham and Sarah, Isaac and Rebekah, Jacob and Esau, and then you go on to Joseph and Moses. So you can practice this like all week. It's on your thing, okay? You can go find this little slide thing on the web if you want to. It'll be on our Facebook page and on our website and stuff like that. Now, just to give you a little geographic, do you want to bop to the map that's next? So we're talking about the Middle East, and you know, you can see here present-day Afghanistan and Iran, Iraq, and everything like that. Babylon there, which is kind of on the middle on the right, that's just a little bit out of Baghdad, okay? And if Adam and Eve, as you know, as you reconstruct where they were talking about, right? I mean, these are beyond historic experiences, but that would have been that Mesopotamian area between those two rivers, the Euphrates and the Tigris, and but this is the kind of the part of the world that we're talking about, up to the Mediterranean Sea. Go to the next one. It goes in a little bit closer. Haran is up at the top. You'll be hearing about that sooner or later. And then down there where it says Canaan, that area, that's kind of where all this action is happening that we're talking about today. So, and where Israel then begins to develop. So got kind of our geography and stuff figured out. Now, here's the big thing. As we're talking about really diving into the book of Genesis and the story of Jacob and trying to understand what it has to do with us, one of the first things you have to do is to learn, like, how do you read the Bible? And how do you do this? Because I think that's one of the goals here, is to figure that out. And here's hint number one, okay? And hint number one is simply that truth can be told with story as well as with facts, okay? Jacob is... probably the Jacob story is undoubtedly linked to some historical figure at some point. But it has gotten much, much bigger than that. I mean, it has become a legend. Probably the time when these events were happening was about in the 15th century B.C., 1400-something B.C. That's a long time ago. Stories develop, and they begin to tell truths beyond historicity, all right? So this idea that truth can be told with story as well as fact is really, really important. And I think we all know that from examples in our day-to-day lives. The second part of that would be this simple fact, and that is the Bible was never intended to be a 21st century book of history. It does not meet our scruples and our understandings of what we think history should be. In fact, even things written 200 years ago would not match up to our objective sense of what history should be like today. So you just gotta drop that, alright? You gotta let go of that and let God speak through this stuff. Alright? In fact, you say, well, Greg, are you saying that's not true? That's the wrong question. And what do we say here at Jacob's Well? Anytime you ask the wrong question, I don't care what answer you come up with, it's not gonna be a helpful answer. That's a wrong question. The question is, what is God teaching us here? And is that reliable or not? Alright? So, that's what we'll be talking about a little bit today. The second hint about reading the Bible that I think we just need to nail at the very beginning is that we're focusing on a couple of chapters from one book of the Bible. All right? We can do some really wild and crazy things by focusing on one small part of the Bible. All right? You need to get, and this is where one of your challenges are and why we say spend some time with your Bible and get to know it. All right? Because you really need to let the whole Bible interpret the parts. One of the dangers is that we take a small part of the Bible and we use it as a key to interpret everything else in the Bible. That's called a sect, all right? That's dangerous. You want to take the overall message, what is God speaking to, and let that enlighten what God says in some very specific parts of it like that, right? So the story of Jacob is amazing. It tells us a lot of stuff. It would be rather dangerous if you used it to extrapolate about what everything else should be, like we should all have, you know, two wives and concubines and stuff like that. That's actually just a very concrete example. I mean, it's not to be taught that way. We need to look at the bigger picture. Okay, so those are some things, and I think maybe you'll see how those play in as we do that a little bit more. So to dive into the story, and I guess this is probably another kind of a disclosure before, and that is really why look at it? And hopefully I've addressed it a little bit. Why spend this time looking at this story in the Bible? I mean, face it, it's, what, 3,500 years old, and it's, you know, culturally so far removed from us and just so bizarre. Really, other than curiosity, why? Why should we be doing this? Okay, two things. One is, it's part of the Bible. It's actually a foundational part of the Bible. And you aren't going to understand a lot of the rest of the stuff that happens in the Bible without this. In fact, you're not going to understand a lot of art and literature from the Western world without knowing this. Okay, so that's one kind of reason. The other reason is that the Bible teaches us, shows us the heart of God. As I said that with Turner's baptism a little bit ago. And we need a broad understanding of everything that's going on, this big pot of narratives and stories all working together to help us understand what that complex heart of God is all about. And this is one of the places that does it. I really believe that truth is in the Bible. I'll say small t truth is in the Bible. Okay? I'll say, not capital T truth. Because capital T truth is that experience you have when the lights go on for you and you say, wow, all of a sudden I like got a glimpse of this universe that is beyond me. As soon as you try to express that truth that you had, that capital T truth that hit you, it turns into a small t truth. Because you can't. You can't grasp it. You can't hold it. So the Bible is this full of stuff where God has given us all of these small t truths and given us the Spirit to work with it that turns it into capital T truths inside us. I can't give you a capital T truth. I can expose you to small t truths and then I can let God work in you to turn those into capital T truths. And then that's how we all have to do that with each other as well. So anyway, so the Bible is full of these truths and it's saturated with them, and time, experience, wisdom helps us to kind of sift some of this out so it begins to happen in there. You know, you probably notice that the Jacob story is great, it's powerful, but it's only so much as it's part of the larger story of the Bible. You know, and the Bible is not full of all this epic heroism. The Bible's full of real stuff, real life, and it doesn't apologize for it. In fact, it very seldom even gives much of an explanation for why some of the things happen the way they happen. It asks us to live with it and to dwell in it and to let it unpack our lives as we go rather than just get something that tells us, oh, I'm supposed to do this and I'm going to do that tomorrow. So that's kind of how that all works. Now, I can't prove that. I can tempt you to engage God. I can tempt you to engage the Bible this way and to look for this stuff. And I trust that you're going to find something as you plumb its step, but that's up to you. So we're going to take this on for a couple of weeks. Okay? Rhetorical question again. We're going to do it no matter what you say right now. Okay, so let's start. The birth of Jacob. I'm going to deal with three stories today from Jacob. They all happen in the first couple of chapters about Jacob. The first is his birth. In fact, it's not just his birth. It's the birth of Jacob and Esau. And you know, so he's this, well, let's just hear the story, okay? These are the descendants of Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham was the father of Isaac. Isaac was 40 years old when he married Rebekah, daughter of Bethuel, the Aramean, da-da-da-da-da. Isaac prayed to the Lord for his wife because she was barren. And the Lord granted his prayer, and his wife Rebekah conceived. The children, plural, struggled together within her, and she said, if it is to be this way, why do I live? It must have been a rough pregnancy. So she went to inquire of the Lord, and the Lord said to her, this is like a prophecy, an oracle that she hears, two nations are in your womb, and two peoples born of you shall be divided. All right? This is forecasting. Jacob and Esau, they are going to become two peoples, two nations. And one shall be stronger than the other, the elder shall serve the younger. One shall be stronger than the other, the elder shall serve the younger. It's a prophecy, isn't it? Interesting, there's always symmetry in these things. So one shall be stronger than the other, so stronger than the other, and one will serve the other. So the one that will do the serving, that's going to be Esau, is also stronger. It's interesting. Okay, details. You'll figure out what that's all about later. When her time to give birth was at hand, there were twins in her womb. The first came out red, all his body like a hairy mantle, so they named him Esau. After his brother came out with his hand gripping Esau's heel, so he was named Jacob. Isaac was 6 years old when she, Rebekah, bore them. So the birth of Jacob is Esau's born first, But Jacob is holding on to Esau's heel. Like, I'm not going to get left behind, guys. You know? So what's this all about? His name, Jacob, means heel, which is sort of like an idiom in ancient Hebrew. We don't really have that same connection anymore, but it means to, like, to step over, to step beyond, right? The heel is an expression they use. So by being, you know, named heel, it means he's going to not only, you know, like, what, holding on to Esau's heel so he's not going to get left behind. In fact, he wanted to get out first, but he's going to get past him sooner or later, right? He's going to find the opportunity, and he's going to do that. Now, a couple of things about that. One is we're finding, getting this glimpse that Jacob is going to be competitive, all right? That's the best possible constructive on that. The other is, and even 3,500 years ago, Bedouins knew better than to think that a baby in the womb could do that, all right? So this is simply telling us, I mean, they're just trying to let us know something about the nature of Jacob is that he's that kind of guy. So we're making a story about him and how he was born to let you know that from the very, very beginning, this is who he was. And interestingly enough, God is strangely silent about it. God says this is going to happen, but does God give it thumbs up, thumbs down? Nope. Nope. God just says, here's what we got. So that's story number one. Story number two. And it comes, falls right after it. Jacob gets his birthright from Esau. And actually, I think on your outlines, it probably says it starts at 29. It really starts on verse 27. When the boys grew up, Esau was a skillful hunter, a man of the field, while Jacob was a quiet man, living in tents. Isaac loved Esau because he was fond of game, but Rebekah loved Jacob. Got parents split on here already. Why? Is it because she likes him better? Is it because she heard the oracle, the prophecy early on, and just always known that this was a son she's going to have to be on the side of? We don't know. So once when Jacob was cooking a stew, Esau came in from the field and he was famished. Esau said to Jacob, let me eat some of that red stuff, for I am famished. Therefore he was called Edom. Get into a little of that before. Edom means red, okay? Jacob said, first sell me your birthright. Esau says, I'm about to die. Of what use is a birthright to me? Jacob said, swear to me first. So he swore to him and sold his birthright to Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau bread and lentil stew, and he ate and he drank, and he rose and he went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright, gave it up to his brother. Okay, what's that about? He gives up his birthright to his brother. I mean, like, fair and square. I mean, it's really kind of a dumb thing to do, right? I can't get a meal in an hour. I can't go someone else. I didn't remember to stop at Chipotle on the way home. You know, what's the big deal? He gives away his birthright, which means that, he'll take over the ownership of whatever his dad has, you know, the actual inheritance. He gets a double share and all that sort of stuff. He gives that all up to Jacob because he's really, really hungry once. One is probably a little bit of a commentary that this guy is not fit to rule, all right? But it happens. It goes there. And, the further question is, the next story is where Jacob actually gets the blessing from Isaac. And so why was this so important to happen anyway? But probably a little bit was going in here, and this is not a bad thing to kind of know, because it goes on in the Bible all the time, is that there's an etiology here, meaning a story about the origin of something. And where did these Edomites come from, all right? The Edomites are these people who lived down by the Dead Sea. And they're understood as having come from Esau and those people. And the fact that there's this dominance of them is kind of gives them an explanation of why they can come back home sometime and take over the land of the Edomites and so on. But you don't need to worry about all that. So what we take away from this is simply this. Jacob is who he is. All right, the story just tells Jacob is who he is. He's conniving. He's determined. He's an opportunist. And despite the fact that Jacob wasn't supposed to be the main character in the story, it was supposed to be Esau who was born first. He is, and he's going to be the main character, and we might as well get ready for that, okay? Chapter 26, we're going to just pass over that, because that's Isaac's story. It's taking Isaac in one more time. The piece on that is worth noting is that the covenant is given there again, and the covenant is told, we realize again this element, because Jacob is going to be a part of this covenant, and it's important that it keeps getting rehearsed. God keeps promising it. He promised it to Abraham. Now he promises it to Isaac again. And it's going to come to Jacob. And that promises three things. The promise is that your people are going to be numerous, like the stars in the sky. your descendants will be that way, and that this land that I show you, you are going to have, you will not be aliens, you aren't going to be nomads, Bedouins, just living in the wilderness forever, you're actually going to own this land. And then one other piece. So there's a people, you're going to be a people, you're going to have a place. Don't understand that in terms of just geography, but God is saying you're going to have a home. You're going to have a home. And then the last thing is that there's a purpose to this. And the purpose is it's not about you, it's about the world. Because he says, and all nations will be blessed by you and your descendants. That's why God is saying, I'm doing this. This is why I'm giving you this covenant. So that all the world could be blessed. Right? So they are a people, they will have a place, and they have a purpose. So with that context, we get into the third story. This is the biggie. Jacob deceives Isaac into giving him Esau's blessing. Some kind of fun stuff here. Chapter 27 begins, when Isaac was old and his eyes were dim so that he could not see, he called his elder son Esau and said to him, "My son." And he answered, "Here I am." He said, "See, I am old. I do not know the day of my death. Now then, take your weapons, your quiver, and your bow, and go out to the field and hunt game for me. Then prepare for me savory food, such as I like, and bring it to me to eat, so that I may bless you before I die." Give him his blessing. Inherit the covenant that he's in charge of. Now, what happens is Rebekah overhears this, all right? Rebekah is Isaac's wife, Jacob's mother, Esau's mother. And she says, "Whoa, no, this isn't what's supposed to happen." So she shifts into high gear and gets this whole thing planned and says, "All right, Esau's out hunting. You go get a kid, a small lamb from the flock, and butcher it and bring it to me. I'm going to cook the food, and we're going to take what's the difference between Jacob and Esau? Esau's all hairy. Jacob is not. So they take the fur from the kid and put it on the backs of his hands and his neck, so all the places that he might be touched by Isaac, so Isaac can be fooled, and work it out that way. And the plot continues to thicken because Jacob protests and says, "What if this doesn't work?" And she says, his mother said to him, so Jacob goes and he went and he got the food and he brought them to his mother, and his mother prepared savory food such as his father loved. Then Rebekah took the best garments of her elder son Esau, which were in her house, and put them on her younger son Jacob. And she put on the skins of the kids on his hands and on the smooth part of his neck. Then she handed the savory food and the bread that she had prepared to her son Jacob. So now Jacob is going to go pull this off. All right? And this is where the plot really thickens, okay? So Jacob goes into his father and says, "My father." And he says, "Here I am. Who are you, my son?" And Jacob said to his father, "I am Esau, your firstborn. I have done as you told me. Now sit up and eat of the game so that you may bless me." But Isaac said to his son, "How is it that you have found it so quickly, my son?" Uh-oh, plan's not working. He answered, "Because the Lord your God granted me success." Quick thinking. Then Isaac said to Jacob, "Come near that I may feel you, my son, to know whether you are really my son Esau or not." So Jacob went up to his father Isaac, who felt him and said, "The voice is Jacob's voice, but the hands are the hands of Esau." He did not recognize him because his hands were hairy like his brother Esau's hands. So he blessed him. He said, "Are you really my son Esau?" He said, "I am." Then he said, "Bring it to me, that I may eat of my son's game and bless you." So he brought it to him, and he ate it, and he brought him wine, and he drank. Then his father Isaac said to him, "Come near and kiss me, my son." So he came near and kissed him, and he smelled the smell of his garments and blessed him and said, "Ah, the smell of my son is like the smell of a field that the Lord has blessed. May God give you of the dew of heaven and of the fatness of the earth and plenty of grain and wine. Let people serve you and nations bow down to you. Be lord over your brothers, and may your mother's sons bow down to you. Cursed be everyone who curses you, and blessed be everyone who blesses you." And as soon as Isaac finishes the meal, of course, then Esau shows up. Okay? So, what do we have here? We have the hero of the Bible, who's lying through his teeth, as deceptive as possible, in order to get this role and to have that he's not supposed to have. You know, how come God doesn't intervene and just set things right? I don't know. It doesn't seem to work that way a lot. So here's what I want to do. I want to talk about three things about Jacob that maybe make a little sense for this, okay? First is this, and you're going to find this on your outline. What about Jacob? First of all, Jacob was a man. Whoa. Jacob was a man with destiny. Yes. Jacob was a man with destiny. I don't know about you, but I get most of my theology from Kelvin and Hobbes. And I don't know if you saw this. I love this one. Mom, from now on, I don't want to be introduced as, to people as plain Kelvin. I want to be introduced as Kelvin, boy of destiny. Boy of destiny? But you have to say it right. Pause a little after boy and say destiny a bit slower and deeper for emphasis. Say it, boy of destiny. Like that. I think I'm going to stop introducing you altogether, his mom says. I wish you had some cymbals to crash after you said it. So you know, this, so, I don't know, you know, whatever your name is, you know, Ken, man of destiny. There you go. Thank you. Not to belabor that point, of course, but so that, I mean, this is who Jacob is. And he saw it, well, I don't know, did he see it that big or not? He certainly played it that big. But here's the deal, okay? Jacob was a man of destiny. You are a man, a woman, a child, a son, a daughter of destiny as well. Because this idea of being of destiny means that you have a calling. So if you look on the outline, you're, you know, a man of destiny, but in parentheses, write the word calling. You have a calling. That means you are playing a place in, you know, God's economy that is so much bigger than anything you can think of. You know, what we miss too often in this story is that, you know, we think of Jacob as a superhero, and he wasn't. He was actually a very broken, frail person, but yet God was using him. God had called him. He had a destiny that he was to be playing out. God is calling everyone. Everyone is worthy of God's calling. We maybe make it seem to make it think, you know, make us think that God matters, or some people matter more. Jacob mattered more. No, everyone matters. You matter. We're all worth God's calling. And God, you know, chooses each one of us. We are all worthy of God's choosing us. So that idea of having a destiny and seizing it is a key thing. I wonder if there's even a message that's saying, God is saying, if you see a calling, if you feel like you have a role out in the world, I hope you don't let anything keep you from pursuing that and having it. The next thing about Jacob is that Jacob was a man of decisions. He was a man of decisions. In parentheses, the word there is choices. We make choices every day. This is key, folks. This is Jacob standing at the edge of that promontory, at that vantage point, looking off across the horizon, knowing he can't do everything. He can't, but he's going to have to do something, and there's some amazing stuff out to do there, so he's going to do what's next. He's going to have to make a choice. You have to make choices. You're standing there too. You're looking at the life beyond you. You're looking at all things ahead of you, and you've got to choose. And one of the things is that it's the choosing that is so important. We worry about choosing right all the time. We don't want to make mistakes. God says, I'm not so worried about your choosing right, because that's focusing too much on this. I just want you to choose and to continue to choose. I get you to the right place, not by your making the right decision, but by your continuing to make decisions and continuing to have me be part of the conversation. And don't worry, we'll get you where you need to go. All right? Don't hang it all up. Just making one right decision now doesn't mean you're going to end up where you want to be, or you should be, or however that might all work. Okay? He's a maker of decisions. He makes choices. We need to do that as well. He's also, the last piece is, he's a master of deception. He was good, at least with Rebecca's help, although we see more of it later on. He's a master of deception. And, you know, this is a problematic part of Jacob, for sure. He's often painted as a scoundrel. I think that's maybe a bit harsh. Not too much, but a bit harsh. He does bend the truth. And but interestingly, God is quite mute about this trait of Jacob's. God doesn't have a whole lot to say. Thumbs up, like I said before, or thumbs down. It's who he is. The parentheses after this, that he's a master of deception, is personality. The point is, this is who Jacob is. All right? He was born that way. They tell us a story about how he was born to realize that from the get-go, it's simply who he is. It's how he's wired. He's going to be this kind of guy. And rather than judging whether he's supposed to be that way or not, God deals with it. All right? God works with what that is. So this personality of Jacob said is somewhat problematic. It isn't, you know, the issue is that he has a personality. Anyone else in this room have a personality? All right? Anybody else have a personality that doesn't need some apologies for it? That doesn't have some, you know, frailties, some foibles, some great strengths that just like turn into huge weaknesses in the wrong situation, whatever they might happen to be? Well, join the club. Maybe this story is telling us that Jacob isn't this superhero that none of us can be like, but he's an ordinary person that is exactly like you are. And the reason he's so great and the reason that God is able to use him is that God can use anybody. In fact, God might even be able to use you, me. I mean, that's pretty amazing stuff. So I want to back off on that. Back off and look at the big picture of these stories. What do we get out of all of this? What are the points here? The first is this. God wants to work with the mixture that is you, not judge it. Right? Now, that's a feeling on there. God wants to work with that grand, crazy, mixed up, wild mixture, which is you, rather than judge who you are. That doesn't mean what you are and who, how you shape things and what you do isn't important and some things aren't better than worse. No, that's another message another week. But God isn't focused on judging it. God is focused on using it because God is about what's next. God's work is about creativity. God is about forgiveness. I mean, look at Jesus. Jesus not only hung out with those kind of people, but he used them. He enlisted those kinds of people. Paul, the super apostle, he was also the super enemy of Jesus and his followers early on. And we get this wonderful verse from him in Romans where he's reflecting on his own life and he says, I decided to do good, but I don't really do it. I decide not to do bad, but then I do it anyway. My decisions, such as they are, don't result in actions. Something has gone wrong deep within me and gets the better of me every time. Is there no one who can do anything for me? The answer, thank God, is that Jesus Christ can and does. He's saying, so Jesus, who is Jesus? Jesus is God's means of saying, I love you, I will work for you, I will work with you, I will work through you, I will work despite you, no matter what. And there's one other thing from the big picture that I think we learn here. And that is Jacob was an irreplaceable link in the giving of the covenant and our receiving the covenant. Jacob was an irreplaceable link, and so are you. You are also an irreplaceable link. You, without Jacob in that history and that, you know, of that cycle, what would have happened? He needed to do what he needed to do. But you are the same person. I mean, just think about your own history. Think about your great-great-great-grandfather, grandmother. I mean, you don't even know them. But if they had just done something very different in their lives, something small, slightly different in their lives, you wouldn't even exist. That person was an irreplaceable link in your life. As you look out across that future, across the possibilities of your life, you are, and your next step is an irreplaceable link to whatever's going to be happening out there. And it's not just in, you know, future generations and who's going to be born and not be born, but I mean in who's going to receive God's love tomorrow or today? Who's going to be told that character matters, that there's such a thing as hope and promise and forgiveness, unless you are the link to that learning, that experience, that acceptance from someone else? And you are not only just in the simple sense that you're the one who might either show rudeness or kindness to the attendant at Super America, but you are actually God's irreplaceable link. You are God's link to that person. You are God present for that person. And, you know, the line is old and maybe too often used, but it's true. If you aren't you, who will be? There is only one you. You are irreplaceable to God being known in people's lives at certain times. So, you know, worry less about being perfect. Worry more about doing what's next and just do it. And this is something that all of us, I think, need to ask of God and to be thinking about ourselves, to be talking about. These are great discussions for group life to be diving into and sharing with each other and wondering about these things. To be considering Jacob and looking deeply into his story. It is a story, but it's more of a story. And God weaves it all together with your story. And that's where we're at for these weeks. So find out how irreplaceable and how indispensable you are. discover how you are loved and accepted for that mixture that is you. And somehow in God's economy of love and hope and forgiveness, all that weaves together and makes sense. God, may you take this message and be at work in our lives in these days as we figure out what it means to be loved and used by you for who we are, for who we can be, and despite who we are and despite who we will be. Thanks for that, Lord. Amen.